What's happening, Panda Nation? Peter from Panda here, going live midday here. I put up a poll this morning and I was surprised to see a lot of responses back already. And the number one thing of all the things that I had the opportunity to live stream about, it was a clear winner, was interesting trivia. I'm one of those guys that loves the stuff. It may not be hugely consequential in life, but I love the idea that there are things that I didn't know because I consider myself pretty well read. That's a joke that Amy Schumer stole from, I don't remember, some other comedian. But I love reading this stuff. I love listening to podcast blogs and all that stuff. And so there's so much stuff out there that's really interesting. And for a lot of us, we get the sound bites. And especially in an era of mainstream media, I think you get what a lot of the national topics are, but you don't get necessarily a deep dive. That's actually one of the reasons I love YouTube, is because I can watch a documentary that someone made on their own about one particular battle, or obscure battle, say, in the Korean War, as opposed to when I was growing up, you would see like a History Channel episode and it was about the Korean War and they never really deep dove. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about was something that I actually did not know, and I'm actually a little embarrassed that I didn't know this. And I'm also almost flummoxed at the reasons why this was not big news, and that is that the Space Shuttle Challenger, if you'll remember back to 1986, Space Shuttle Challenger exploded shortly after launch. I'm sure you remember that if you're of the age that you were alive, but even if you're not, it was a pretty big historical. I was in grade school at the time, and what I didn't know is that it is fairly well assumed now that the astronauts survived the explosion. And I was a little skeptical about this, but I did some reading and there are some reasons why it didn't make big news. And there are some reasons why people were a little skeptical about it. And I probably would have been one of those people, but I thought I would just try to give you the information that I have found here. Now, first of all, I will say it's funny because when you Google this, there isn't a lot of information out there. This is from the 80s. It's old history now, but it's important history. But I think one of the big problems is, as far as I can tell, is that a lot of these initial stories are under conspiracy blogs, right? One of the articles that I was reading that was talking about, you know, what happened or why they think the astronauts survived was a story talking about the conspiracy about astronauts surviving Challenger. And now, I think even in the NASA community and the space community, it's fairly well assumed that they did. And I think the evidence is pretty strong. It, like I said, it's probably not consequential. There was nothing we could do about it at the time. But I wanted to share with you what I understand happens. Now, as you might know, in 86, the Challenger was on the launch pad. There was a lot of freezing in Florida at that time. In fact, I think the orange groves were decimated. And so a lot of oranges were lost. It actually hit the orange market pretty badly. And but the O-rings around the solid rocket boosters shrank, cracked, broke, whatever, but I think shrank and didn't create a proper seal. And so when those solid rocket boosters, the big white boosters on the sides of the space shuttle were ignited, flame and fuel was leaking out one of the sides, and that was a blowtorch on the main fuel tank. The big orange tank that sits in the middle is just fuel. And it was basically blowtorching that and eventually breached that. And what we saw then, a minute into that flight, or a minute and 13 seconds, I think, is that the Challenger explodes. And that is pretty much this picture. Now, I'm going to do this a little bit janky. And so I'm just going to show you some pictures of stuff that I've actually printed out. But what I assumed at that time is that when you see that big explosion, it's just a big puff of smoke. You see the solid rocket boosters fly out of directions. My assumption is that just everything was incinerated at that time, that the astronauts were deceased at that point. And I get that for the sake of the astronauts that were on there, God rest their souls, and Krista McAuliffe was a teacher that was a big piece of this and a big piece of the PR and what made this flight interesting in many ways, that we don't want to reflect on people suffering and anything that might be too hard to imagine, because this was a really tragic and shocking moment for a lot of people. And for the out of respect for the astronauts and the families that are dealing with the grief, I think that there was not a lot of follow-up news on it. So what ends up happening is the shuttle explodes and you see a lot of contrails, or these smoke trails, as the debris is being shot away. Now, this is a screenshot that you can find this online. You can watch the video. There's a lot of actually slow-mo video filming it. But what here we have is one of the solid rocket booster controls, I think, possibly. And then you have the crew cabin. And this is a very low res, quickly draft printed on my inkjet here, of the crew compartment in front of one of these controls, which makes it stand out a little bit. Now, when I saw that and they slow it down in slow mo, it definitely looks like you can see the shape of the nose cone and stuff. And as I was thinking about it, it makes sense why the crew compartment blew off. Now, I printed out this picture because I think it illustrates what my point is here, is that just like every vehicle, and I've been into cars a long time, there are weak spots and strong points, and that is largely underneath all the things that you can see. And so here, what we can see in the space shuttle is that most of the space shuttle is meant as payload, right? It's this big vacuous container right here. And in this case, it's carrying satellites, and that's what it did. Skylab components, whatever, ISS components. And so it's meant as like a truck for space. Now, the really hard parts of this, my assumption is, where we have the rockets, which are used for liftoff, and then the crew compartment. You can see, it's almost when you think of a car and you open the doors and you look at it from the side on, you'll see the engine bay is static and the trunk bay. When you open car doors, that passenger compartment, because it's supposed to be space for people, is a weak spot of the car. That's where cars twist and flex and they can break apart and things like that. And it's very similar on the space shuttle. Now, so when I heard that the crew compartment blew off, I thought, why just the crew compartment? It makes sense to me that this is a hardened structural piece here. Paresh, what's happening, brother or sister? Glad to have you here. When this is exposed to an explosion, it would probably break the middle, the weakest part, and these two pieces would probably fly off separately. And in fact, what we have now is footage of when that happened, so that this is being thrown away. And in fact, the last recorded piece of audio is after the explosion, a split second after the explosion, and I believe the captain says, uh-oh, and then the transmission is lost. So they weren't instantly incinerated. So that's one myth busted. Jericho, sup, man? Glad to have you here. All right, so now we know the crew cabin is being ejected. Now the question is, are they alive, or were the G-forces, the accelerator forces, so much that they were crushed and or killed or even incapacitated? It's possible, although now I guess the estimate saying that the accelerator forces were survivable. And we actually know that some of the rockets that are attached to crew portions of rockets that are meant to eject them, say like in a rocket that's sitting on a launch pad, can explode. And you might see they look antenna towers that stick off the nose cone. I think they had it on the Saturn V. There are rockets attached to it, and that is to draw off the crew module very quickly. So you can ignite that, and those are like 13, 14 Gs or something that you experience. So survivable. So the idea that they were able to survive the G-forces is possible. Some of them may have passed out, that no doubt about it. But what ends up happening now is the communications are cut off, and if the crew module is intact, it is a very high altitude. In fact, I want to say that I think the explosion happened around 45,000 feet, which is very high, and then they topped out at somewhere like 60,000 feet. So because of their trajectory, they are flying up. When it explodes, they're continuing to fly up, and they peak at 60,000 feet. So at this point, as I understand it, and I'm just giving you what I've read here, I'm not the expert on this, that at that altitude, you would only stay conscious for between 9 and 15 seconds because of the low oxygen environment. All right, so if they are awake for this period of time, they aren't going to be awake for long because of the lack of oxygen. Now, here's where some more evidence comes in. The astronauts actually have an emergency oxygen pack attached to them. Almost everyone, except for apparently two people. And what ends up happening is if the oxygen supply is cut off, they will start drawing out of the oxygen packs. Now, a couple of these people, and it's probably not super important, but Scobie and Smith, I believe, are the only two that actually have to go to or attach or turn on their oxygen packs. Everyone else, assuming you run out of the onboard oxygen, you would automatically draw from these oxygen packs. But the Scobie and Smith apparently could not do that. So I'm not sure exactly what the difference is there. What ends up happening is that now for almost 2.5 minutes, it's almost mind-boggling because of that altitude. Even though the crew capsule is now descending at like 200 miles an hour, it takes them that long to get back to denser air, that possibly the crew is awake. They're drawing oxygen because we know at least on 4 recovered oxygen packets, 3 of them are heavily used by the time the debris is recovered. And one, which is by Scobie, is unused, but that's not a surprise given that would probably not have had the opportunity to get their oxygen pack. So it appears, conscious or not, that the astronauts are actually breathing at some point before they hit the water. Now, unfortunately, they survived the explosion. And 2.5 minutes plus, the astronauts at that point perish. And I am not trying to undersell this at all. I actually remember the Challenger disaster. We weren't watching it in school, but there was a kid, and I think it was Jonathan Hoger, was running around my school at the time yelling, "The shuttle exploded." And I didn't actually know what that meant. I wasn't actually sure what the shuttle was until I saw it later on TV in the evening news. And then I realized what it was. I wasn't getting when they were explaining this. Hey, Justy, I appreciate this. Thanks, man. It was a very moving moment for me, too. And so I'm not trying to undersell this and the astronauts that were lost. I totally get why this information was not, one, all that relevant, and two, protected and quarantined in some ways for the benefits of the families, because unbelievably tough time. And if you'll remember, I think the State of the Union by President Reagan was supposed to happen that night, and it was postponed. And because obviously he made a speech about the astronauts from the Oval Office. And I think a lot of people remember that because it was the one that ended with the quote, "and touched the face of God." And so it's one of those quoted speeches quite a bit. And I think the Aaron Copland Fanfare for the Common Man music is often played with that speech. And so you can go on, I'm assuming, YouTube and see it. And just a moving speech. He was quite the orator. And so that was, I just remember that. And I've always loved the NASA things. We'll get into that a little bit more. I've got some more interesting trivia about this story. So unfortunately, that is probably the moment when they perish, and the crew compartment on impact of the water is heavily destroyed. And there is not going to be, by the time they recover bodies and the debris, and it's strewn over the ocean. And as you can imagine with the Malaysia Airlines and everything, once in impact with the ocean, finding debris, collecting it takes forever. And in fact, I have heard that even now, Challenger debris is still washing up on the shores of Florida, not necessarily in great quantities, but in fact, I believe there was a very large piece that just recently was recovered. Despite the best recovery efforts and where some of these are now in museums, I think there is still just a ton out there. So it was amazing to me that they were able to even find that crew capsule and put together the fact that the crew was probably alive, but not necessarily conscious, but we don't know that for sure. What I also think, there are a couple other interesting hero stories out of this, is that during the recovery of the crew, Gregory Jarvis, one of the crew members' body was actually escaped from the wreckage as they were trying to bring it up, and the body floated away, and they tried to recover it, and they weren't able to do that, and the body sank, and it was lost. And let's see here, I want to give everyone credit. Fellow astronaut Robert Crippen, I think is how you pronounce his name, ended up, because he was determined not to end the recovery operations without retrieving Jarvis, rented a fishing boat on his own and went searching for the body. And on April 15th, near the end of the salvage operations, Navy divers found Jarvis. His body had settled to the seafloor 101 feet below the surface and almost a mile from the resting place of the rest of the crew compartment. So the body was recovered. So it's amazing to me that you have people that, man, no man left behind situation to go through that effort. And all the bodies were recovered. The condition of them obviously is irrelevant and generally unknown. In one case, it sounds like a full casket was used for one of them. One of the astronauts may have been in pretty good in whole condition. And so that's actually maybe nice that they were able to do that. As you'll remember, like I said, that was a dark day in NASA's history, but it was just amazing to me to think that astronauts were alive, because I'd actually seen, there was a IMAX movie called, oh gosh, I cannot remember, but it was about NASA, and they showed a sequence where NASA astronauts train to deploy this arm out of the crew compartment, attach like a carabiner, slide out, pull the ripcord, eject basically, not eject, but evacuate the crew compartment. And I thought, man, that seems really hard. And especially if you're at speed tumbling, that's just no way to do it. And I know NASA, after the Challenger accident, even thought about putting in ejection seats. The space shuttle was probably not long for that, even though it continued to run. Here is my personal trivia about this, is that I really, like I said, really was enamored with the space shuttle idea. There was actually a thing called the Venture, which used a rocket spike engine or something like that to be the next generation of space shuttle. And I was really excited about that. Venture Star or something like that. I can't remember exactly. Never ended up happening, and I was disappointed by that. But as a kid, I was so enamored with NASA that I got the chance, and I want to say it was about 2.5 years later, that NASA finally got the space shuttle program back going. And it was Discovery. It looks like September 29th, 1988. And I went down to Cape Canaveral to see that launch. It's the only spacecraft launch I've ever seen. I know that there are private companies like SpaceX and Blue Origin and some of these other, and NASA on top of that, that are still doing rocket launches. And I will tell you this, if you have the chance to go down and see a rocket launch, because I went down and saw the Discovery launch, it was amazing. It was amazing. You may have a job or a vocation that puts you in the midst of high-powered jets and rockets and things like that, but for me, it was awe-inspiring. The amount of noise and vibration. What's up, Jose? What's up, my man? That it puts out. And I think we were something like 5 miles away in the viewing area. Was just absolutely incredible. It is loud and roaring. The shuttle that you're watching is like this big on the distance. It's on the horizon. But then once it goes, it is just, it's like almost unbelievable. Big Mac Sam, what's up, brother? Welcome. It is almost unbelievable that you've got this thing that is putting out these huge plumes, that it is shaking the ground like it is really one of those things where you can't believe humans have been able to control so much violence and to harness it for spaceflight. It's awe-inspiring. And I would bet that, cool, man, Big Mac Sam, is something coming up that the NASA topic is interesting? I'm curious. Throw it in the comments and throw it in the chat. But it's just really awe-inspiring. So I bet any major rocket, anything that, you know, is taking something from sea level to space has got to have a lot of power. So if you have the chance to see it, I would. So my hat's off to the people at NASA who were working on this. Navy SEAL, doctor, then astronaut. Crazy dude, man. Johnny Kim. Got to hand it to these guys who put their lives on the line for science and stuff like that, and it's pretty awesome. And I guess what I was most stunned by is the fact that once you see the explosion, in some ways you are, and I've seen the video a number of times since being a kid, is that you think you're so mortified by it. You're so mortified by what's going on, but you are maybe comforted in thinking, hey, it's over for those people. That what we like to think is that things, people don't suffer, and life is ties things up in a nice bow sometimes. And to think that for those helpless 2.5 minutes, that crew might have still been alive was just something I had never even thought about. It never even entered my mind that they might have been able to survive that explosion, given how violent and how large it was. And so the fact that they did, and the fact that they would have met their end in a moment afterwards, and hopefully maybe were unconscious during it, but it's almost hard to comprehend. I was engrossed by reading this, and like I said, it was some conspiracy theories, but then as I read more and more in recent years, people have come out and said this is what their professional opinion was about the astronauts. So that is my long story about the Space Shuttle Challenger astronauts surviving the initial explosion. Obviously, they did not survive. I think America came together at that moment. There were a number of Space Shuttle launches after that. It wasn't until really the Columbia disaster on reentry that kind of put the final nail in the coffin for the shuttle program. And it's generally handled, space travel is generally handled a lot by the privateers now. Just interesting. And now you can see those shuttles. If you want to see a shuttle, I've never seen one up close. I know there are a couple on the East Coast. I think one down in Houston, California. None made it to the Midwest, which I was mortified about too, because I thought, I think there's one of them is in New York and the other is in like Washington, D.C. or something. So there's two, I feel, and someone can correct me on that, but I feel like there's two in the East Coast in close proximity, but there isn't a single one here in the Midwest for people to be able to drive through. I thought that was a big miss to not put one in Chicago or St. Louis or in Detroit or somewhere like that, or even Minneapolis, a place where you can go and see it, because I certainly would love to do that. Now, the other piece of trivia here that I'm going to throw out is that you can check out my video history, is I actually have one of the silica space shuttle tiles that NASA created. It is generally just kind of like this ball of foam with this outer layer. I actually did a little bit of an unboxing. I was wrong about some of the details on it. It has suffered over the years. It's amazing because it is so fragile and it is falling apart now. I think because that outer shell is dried off and the foam now tends to start disintegrating and turning into powder. So I have it wrapped in plastic to try to protect it. It never flew, was never used on a shuttle. It was simply an overrun production. All the cells, or the foam cells that are used on shuttles, are printed on there with their location. There's like a numeric location that gets printed on it. Mine does not have it, or at least it's not there anymore, if it ever was meant to be used. But it's pretty big. It's kind of like this. And I bought it simply because I was just really interested. Now, you can buy little pieces of it. They sell little collectible pieces. So I think those tiles have been sold off in many cases. But it is so fragile. It's amazing to me that is what was supposed to take the brunt of reentry, that it's supposed to take like these air speeds of hundreds of miles an hour, thousands of miles an hour in some cases, and then just like a blowtorch-like heat, because it seems so fragile and delicate. And it truly is. It really is. And obviously that was part of the problem with the Columbia disaster, in that those tiles were damaged during takeoff and then not caught during flight to be able to repair. And I don't know that they could have repaired it. I don't know if you carry extra supplies in space and are able to do that. I know in subsequent shuttle missions, they did do some minor repairs, removing some of the filler pieces and things like that came out and came loose during takeoff. It's just really interesting. So I have one of those. You can check out that video. It's probably years old now, but it's still sitting in my closet. It's a cool piece. I always thought it'd be awesome if it really was able to hold its shape and stay in really good condition. I put it in a glass box, but it's just not presentation worthy. But you can buy, people have bought them and, like I said, cut them up, put them on little collectible NASA cards and things like that. But they are really interesting. So anyway, that's just my take for today. Hope you're all doing well. These are kinds of things that I like just going down the rabbit hole on sometimes and educating myself. There's no real value in it other than honoring some of the history that we have here. And if you're interested in more of this, I will look at putting together the next topic, because there are a lot of interesting things to share with you, man. There are a lot of interesting things. Stay well, everyone. Like, share, subscribe, and send me messages. Like I said, got some photos. I mentioned yesterday that if you've got photos of you and some captions or some text that you want to share, please send it to petervonpanda@petervonpanda.com. I'm going to roll in some of those photos at the end. Got some funny ones. Got some stuff that will stay in my private collection because I'm not going to share some of those on the channel. But for the family safe ones, I'll put out there. John Chapman. Oh, okay. American History Chesty. I know. It's just fascinating. There are so many unsung heroes and villains and just things that I think we assume went down a certain way. And the truth is far more fascinating than the assumption on it, and in some cases the fiction. So look forward to sharing some more of that. The Chapman thing, I don't even know who that is. I'm going to have to look into that. That's interesting. Let me share it here, assuming I can get my head wrapped around it and share it with people. That's it. Look forward to talking to you guys again soon. Peter Von Panda, out.